I'm Paul Wegraff, director of the Delaware Division of the Arts and your host for today. Joining me remotely is the founder and artistic director of Capitol Ringers, Linda Sims. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Paul. Good to see you again.
So glad to see you, even if it's over Zoom. It's been a while.
It's the way we do things now.
And I think the last time we spoke, it was a different world out there.
Definitely was at the Smyrna Opera House.
Yeah. For our listeners, just a little bit about the founding of Capitol Ringers, how it got started, and then we'll take a look at what you've been doing in recent months to cope with COVID.
Sure. So in 2004, I asked a number of ringers in the adjoining communities to meet with me to discuss the possibility of creating a community handbell ensemble. And so several of us met, we discussed the possibilities, what kind of music we would want to play, how we would proceed with that. And we started rehearsing as a community group. We grew, we were using the equipment and the facilities of a church where I was working at the time. And in about a year later, we went ahead and applied for the nonprofit status, got that, and eventually moved to Wesley College, where we rehearsed for a while, then to the Presbyterian Church of Dover, where we rehearsed for a while. And in 2018, we moved to Sussex County, where I felt the demographic was going to be far better to support the organization. And we are now rehearsing at Conley's United Methodist Church near Lewis, Delaware. And things have really improved since we moved there, with the number of ringers and extra volunteers to help us with all of our productions.
Talk a little bit about your ringers, where they come from, how many you have, their backgrounds.
Well, we currently have in Capitol Ringers, there are two different ensembles in the Capitol Ringers Incorporated. We have two different ensembles, a more advanced ensemble, which we nicknamed CRE for the Capitol Ringers Ensemble. And we roughly have right now about 16 ringers. Some of them revolve, take turns ringing because we have more than we need right now as far as the ringing staff. And then we have an intermediate and beginning group called Bay to Bay. And the Bay to Bay ringers are now on hiatus because of COVID. We have been, CRE has been rehearsing just in a modified way because of COVID.
What do those rehearsals look like now? Are you able to come together in a space but just spread out more?
Yes. So we're lucky that Conley's United Methodist Church allows us to use the facility during this time. We have been rehearsing in their sanctuary with, instead of ringers sharing bells and sharing tables, we have each ringer on a 6-foot table, and even those 6-foot tables are spaced apart. Some at the front of the sanctuary and then some down the side of the sanctuary on the exterior part of the pews. So we're really spread out. And of course, the challenge with that is acoustics. Mm-hmm. The challenge is not feeling that energy with your fellow ringers at the same time. The distance between me and ringers. So the challenge is keeping everybody together on this challenging instrument to begin with, but also to produce something that's very musical and is going to be delightful for our audiences to hear, even though they won't be presently in the sanctuary when we perform. And that's the challenge too, is not having an audience that we can have that energy going back and forth in the room.
So I'm trying to visualize this. You are practicing almost in the round and you are surrounded by bell players. Is that
somewhat? Think of it as a giant U.
Okay.
And I'm in the opening end of the giant U, and our percussionist Ken Schleifer is in front of me several feet. He and I are distance, and everyone is wearing a mask. I'm not, because I'm so far back from everyone.
Right.
But everyone else is wearing a mask, and we're very spread apart. Mm-hmm. But it works.
Now, you mentioned that there's a different configuration in terms of ringers not sharing bells. What kind of precautions are you taking as you store the bells, as you bring them out, set up the tables, that sort of thing?
We actually have borrowed another set of bells from one of our ringers' churches in Frederick, Maryland. And so that has allowed us to distribute bells so that every ringer has been taking home, with the exception of the largest bass bells, every ringer has been taking home their bells so that they were able to practice before we got together, because we knew that our rehearsal sessions were going to have to be minimal. Mm-hmm. Rather than having roughly 12 to 13 rehearsals of 3 hours each, we've had 6 rehearsals of 2 hours each. And then we followed up with recording sessions. We did that because we knew that that gathering that length of time, that many people, the longer we were together, the more susceptible we were.
Right. Does this make it more incumbent on each of the ringers to be working on their music at home?
Yes, that was definitely a challenge for some ringers. Some ringers, it didn't, you know, it was no different. But to have to prepare your music at home when you are used to doing it together was definitely more challenging. Keeping in mind that a handbell ensemble is representative of a piano keyboard.
Right.
So that if you are playing a C and a D, you don't get to hear the E and the F on to your right or the A and the B to your left.
Right.
So you're just ringing just those two bells, and that's what makes it challenging to begin with. But then obviously this particular scenario has even increased that.
I was going to say, it must be quite challenging having played in orchestras and bands and sung chorally. In those kinds of settings, even though your part is isolated, there is typically, not always, but there's more of a flow to what it is you're doing, where with the bells, it is so intermittent that I would imagine not having that audible available to you poses a real challenge. It becomes strictly timing or counting or hearing the music in your head, maybe, but not hearing it, actually.
You just said it so succinctly. You're absolutely right, because it is intermittent. And the challenging part of handbells to begin with the full ensemble right there, shoulder to shoulder, in what we call normal times now, is challenging enough, because not only do you have to ring on time, but you have to stop the ring on time, which the terminology is to damp. We have to ring it on time, damp it on time, so that it's not blurring or overlaying anyone else coming in the phrase.
Right. Now, so you said your musicians have come together maybe 6 times for 2-hour stretches. Where are they coming from? Are they all in the Lewis area, or do they travel distances?
Not at all. I come from Dover down to Lewis. We have a ringer who lives in Hebron, so near Salisbury. Mm-hmm. And then from Milford, Lincoln, that area, generally speaking, mostly Sussex County is the majority of, the location for our ringers.
Now, are most of your ringers, have they come to you with previous ringing experience, say in church handbell choirs or that sort of thing?
Most have, but not all. Some ringers have a background on another instrument. A lot of them have had background in keyboard or some sort of piano experience, and so they understand reading both staves, so it's not a challenge that way.
Let's talk a little bit about the different types of bells that you have and the various techniques. It's not a matter of just picking up a bell and shaking it. Let's talk a little bit about the various skills that are involved in this.
So we have our core set of bells is from Schulmerich. Schulmerich is a manufacturer up in Pennsylvania, as are the two foundries or manufacturers of handbells in our country are near Pennsylvania, north of Philadelphia. And the 6th octave set that we have is then 73 bells. That's the core set that we own. We also have a set of Whitechapel bells that originally came from London. Mm-hmm. They are defined by, as a, when you look at them, they have leather handles instead of vinyl handles. The clapper mechanism, the little thing inside that makes the sound that when it strikes the bronze, they're made a little differently on the inside. So the mechanism is clearly visibly different. And then the bells even sound different. They have just a different timbre to them. Mm-hmm. We also have silver melody bells. Those are little, some people call them cup bells. They look like a Campbell's soup can. Right. And with a handle, and they have a unique sound. We also have sim bells, which are castings that are suspended on a rack that you play with mallets. And of course, we have tubular chimes and we have hand chimes. And the hand chimes are made out of aluminum. So different metals beget different timbres or sounds. And then the mechanism inside, which strikes the metal, also contributes to the different sound as well. But the techniques are phenomenal. There are upwards to about 30 different ways of achieving a sound from a regular handbell. From shaking, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard before, that's pretty simplistic, to striking it into a pad called a martellato. We also have another one where you ring the bell and then you just lightly tap it to the cushion or pad and it gives like an echo sound. Mm-hmm. You can use mallets on them, just like you line them up in keyboard order and like you would play a marimba or a piano.
Right.
Everything is in keyboard or chromatic order and you can just use your mallets. Mm-hmm. The mallets would be different. Some are softer heads than others, depending on what you're going to use on which bells.
Now, I seem to recall one of the concerts of yours that I attended, there was an effect of it almost sounded like you were plunking the bell.
Yes. The plunking was probably called the martellato, which you take the bell and you don't ring it first, you just plunk it into, that's your word, we'll use that, Paul, you just plunk it into the pad.
Okay.
Because our pads are 4 or 5 inches thick, it doesn't hurt the bell.
Yeah. And I also recalled a variety of percussive effects.
Yes, yes. And especially with the malleting, that gets a lot of really interesting percussive, you know, effects because, like I said, different mallets on different sizes of bells, and you're going to have some unique sounds that come with that.
Well, let's shift over to the actual music itself, but let me remind our listeners first that you're tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. I'm chatting today with Linda Sims, the founder and artistic director of Capitol Ringers. Linda, the music repertoire for bells, is it, I know a lot of it from my past experience, is music that's been adapted for bells. Are there original compositions for handbells as well?
Actually, there's quite a few original compositions, and a lot of handbell choirs, or especially community groups, will commission pieces to be created by our arrangers and composers for the purpose of some special event or to dedicate to a special person.
Okay, and some of those compositions, you mentioned a variety of different bells that you have in your collection. Do you use different types of bells in the same piece, or will you just use tubular chimes for a piece and then switch over to the more traditional handbells?
Well, the cool thing about the different varieties of sounds that you can achieve from bells is, for instance, if we have a piece of music that we're playing that we feel like the melody is somewhat hidden in the middle of, we call the battery, the middle section of the bells, mm-hmm. and we can put that on either the hand chimes, which are just that, the hand chimes, you know, not the tubular chimes, or we could put them on the silver melody bells, or we could put them that melody on the Whitechapel bells. And because that particular sound or timbre sticks out differently, then it enhances the melody and the melody is not hidden. It would be as though for those listeners who are not familiar with the word timbre, it would be the difference between listening to a trumpet versus a flute.
So it would be similar to pulling a different stop on the organ. You get a unique,
absolutely,
a unique sound for that melodic phrase.
Exactly. Yeah. So it, some of the music comes with that suggestion. A lot of the music does not. So that comes down to just a matter of the director and maybe skilled ringers knowing what to listen for to make that determination of how we need to adjust.
Well, let's shift gears now to your upcoming program, Tidings of Comfort and Joy, Holidays 2020. Quite a unique task you've undertaken for this holiday season, given the restrictions we're all facing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Talk a little bit about how you conceived of this program, how you put it together, what it's entailed, and what it's going to look like.
So to be honest, I don't even remember what the original concert was going to be called. Because when COVID hit and we had our last rehearsal on March 8th for our spring show that needed to be canceled, and that was going to be Handbells Rock, we had all these fabulous rock pieces prepared and we're ready to go out on the road, and we had to sever that. So that's now put on the back burner. But taking the situation in, considering the situation that we're in right now with COVID and facing what I projected it was going to be long term, I decided that we would not do any kind of comedic kind of piece in the show like we often do. We'll do something kind of funny or cute and silly. So I decided to keep it a little bit more of traditional music that I felt would be more comforting to everyone, because we are now in such a time when live music is not going to happen for a while. Audiences are not going to congregate to listen to music together. We're not going to experience it together. So I went back to the drawing board and decided to redo some of the repertoire that I had selected. So instead, it's going to be Feel Good Things, Winter Wonderland, Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. You know, trying to keep it positive without keeping it, you know, trying to be too sad about everything going together. Our signature piece is Wizards in Winter. That's always what we end our shows with, which is wild and crazy. So we maintain that. But we're also doing other pieces like God With Us for All Time and The Holly and the Ivy. So a lot of traditional pieces, but nothing, cute and, filled with any kind of silliness, keeping it a little bit more calm.
So you have, at the time of this recording, you have already recorded the program, or where are you in the process?
Yes, we have, and we're exhausted. So we did the rehearsals, and they were going so well that we actually, in the last rehearsal, we actually started to record a little bit. Okay. And so we ended up recording 3 different weeks, and we purchased a lot of microphones, about 20 microphones. And luckily we have 4K cameras owned by some of our volunteers in the group, and very largely owned by my husband. Mm-hmm. And so we did a 6 camera shoot with 20 microphones. We bought a mixer. And, our tech guys just upped the ante and really stepped forward and have been in the process of now editing what we captured in raw data.
So the arts and technology come together.
Yes. Yes. You know, we, as a group, we just decided, I mean, this was a lot of dedication of a lot of people, mm-hmm, who decided that after we had gone through in the wintertime a situation, we went ahead and had Dana come in, the Delaware Alliance for Nonprofit Advancement. So we had Dana come in, Tony Ferlenda, did some training sessions for us. We were already headed in the direction of restructuring and regrouping, going from, by my request, a founder-centric organization to a board-centric.
Uh-huh.
looking ahead. And so we've gone through a lot of training, and we redid our mission statement. We really revamped the whole thing, and to include our board. So we restructured our board, and moving forward, when this all came about, we had just kind of gotten into a good place with all of the restructure. And we decided collectively that we needed to see what we could do to continue on the trajectory to try to provide some kind of music. Mm-hmm. Of course, none of us knew what was going to happen. Right. We thought summer was going to be better, and then we thought the fall would be better. And
right.
So that's what took us to where we are, and what we've accomplished already to be able to get all of that in the can into the editing stage to get out to our audiences.
In the minute that we have left, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to tell our listening audience how they can find out about your upcoming program, how they can access it and experience it.
Well, we have such an incredible team for marketing and media right now. Leanne Walling has done a phenomenal job on our website. So the best place I would say is just go to our website, and she has put together several different little videos that kind of entice and explain the options that everyone has. So it's www.capitalringers, that's 2 A's, CAPITAL, ringers.org. And if you go to Capital Ringers on our website, you'll be able to find all of the options and pick and choose what you would think would be best. You can even gift it to a nursing home or your church or your friends.
Or your distant family that you might not be able to get together
exactly.
with.
Exactly. Grandma out in San Diego, you can send it to Grandma. That's right. I could gift it to Paul Wegraff. There you go.
That's great. And this will be an audio and video program.
Yes, it will. Yeah. Yes, it will. And I interviewed the arrangers of all of our music, so there will be excerpts from that as well.
Great. Well, Linda Sims, the founder and artistic director of Capital Ringers, thank you so much. I encourage our listeners to visit www.capitalringers.org.
Thank you, Paul.